Hello and welcome to another episode of Dramatic Dublin. This week I'll be interviewing Fionn Foley, writer and performer of the recent production of Eamon from Menswear, which I understand is going to be revived shortly. I'll be reviewing said play as well, of course. And, as always, giving you the lowdown of what's going on in theatres around Dublin. I'm afraid theatre is pretty scarce on the ground these next couple of weeks, but you just have to hold out, and then once the Fringe Festival begins, you'll be up to your ears in theatre. I can't wait. Next up, I'll be reviewing Eamon from Menswear, written and performed by our guest this week, Fionn Foley, and produced by Ill Advised Theatre Company. Tagline used to advertise this show is concise and appropriate. It describes the show as a musical comedy about things that aren't funny. Eamon from Menswear takes a humorous view on the trials and tribulations of working in the retail industry. While at first glance this play is lighthearted and filled with laughter, when we dig beneath the surface, it is a play that questions the Irish mentality and our opinions on race, gender and sexuality. As a nation, we are set in our ways and are not fond of anything we consider different. Mild racism is very common among Irish people, along with mildly sexist remarks, mild homophobia. Of course, this is something that needs to be addressed, and Eamon from Menswear brings these things to the forefront and presents them to the audience. Fionn Foley's performance in this production is such that there is very little set or props required in order for the performance to work. Foley needs very little in terms of set, props, etc. to create the idea of Eamon from Menswear. The lighting is simplistic, but that is what is required for the performance to work. Anything more will seem laboured and unnecessary. The choice of simple lighting gives the play the sense of reality that it needs. Costume-wise, Eamon is dressed the way a young man who works in retail for a menswear store would be dressed. Shirt, chinos, and fancy shoes, which works to create the idea of Eamon. It is the S of Eamon. He is stylish, but not too stylish. He is approachable, but not too casual. Exactly how a salesperson in a menswear store should be. Eamon's ponderings take shape with rhythm, creating a rap-like experience for the audience. From the beginning, Eamon addresses the audience as if they were new recruits in the retail industry, and he is their boss. He creates a great sense of rapport with the audience and makes them feel part of the show, addressing them directly at various points throughout the evening. Despite the deep questions that are dealt with in this production, on a whole, it is full of fun songs that, if you're a fan of rhythm and, of course, style, and let's face it, who isn't? This is definitely the right production for you. It was definitely the right production for me. Fionn Foley is a force to be reckoned with. As writer and star of the show, he is incredible. His skills are certainly something that should be acknowledged and appreciated. He'll go on to do great things, undoubtedly, and I intend to be there to see them happen. I also look forward to seeing more from this theatre company. Ill Advised Theatre Company have plenty to offer, and I can't wait to see what they come up with next. Welcome back. That was my review of Eamon from Menswear. At the moment, I have Fionn Foley, writer and performer of Eamon from Menswear, ready to chat about his part in creating Eamon from Menswear, how it began and how it developed and became what it eventually ended up as, a successful piece of theatre. Okay, so the subject matter of the play and the accuracy with which it was dealt with indicates that the writer may have worked in retail at some point. Is that the case?
Yes, a limited experience. I would have done, like many people, the old part-time job. So yeah, I would have worked in a retail department, which would be nameless.
That's probably for the best. Anybody who's seen the show will know that perhaps the customers aren't shown in the best light.
Well, if anyone who will see the show or would have seen the show will know that, I suppose, a lot of things that come across as literal representations of people are actually, you know, more about stuff more abstract and more kind of macrocosmic ideas like national identity, racism, self-identity, and the way we portray and see ourselves. So, yeah, I wouldn't think it's so much a shot at retail consumers or capitalism or anything like that. It's more, I suppose, what they represent within the play.
Absolutely. You know, it's just a wagon on which to place the real initiative behind the play.
Yes, I suppose there is a kind of an element of satirising the actual workplace and the monotony of the 9-to-5 that so many people, I suppose, in retail put in, but ultimately it's about bigger things than that, I suppose.
Being the man in other people's eyes as you see yourself, seeing yourself through other people's eyes as the man, and assuming everybody else sees you that way as well, because you're so flippant in your remarks about other people based on their gender or their sexuality or their race, as is demonstrated in the play.
Yeah, I mean, the idea of Eamon, the character himself, is, I suppose, a symbol for all the different prejudices and things that we consider, I suppose, the norm or take for granted as just, you know, aspects of our society and our culture. Whereas, I suppose, what we try to do with Eamon from Menswear is to actually put them in a very kind of a mundane, banal context, like just the shop floor of a menswear shop, and just maybe try and expose some of the things that are actually more dangerous than we think, and that aren't just things to be accepted about society and things to be accepted as just the attributes of the world that we live in. So, yeah, I suppose it's about taking big concepts and reducing them to, I suppose in this case, just a one man on a shop floor.
Yeah, and it's such a deep issue that does need to be dealt with, and yet you managed to keep the play lighthearted throughout, which was really interesting and not easy to achieve, I wouldn't imagine.
No, not at all. Well, you know, it's of course an opinion whether it was achieved or not. I think that's what we try to do. Satire, of course, is like the very essence of satire is to, I suppose, deal with things that aren't funny in a funny light, while still, I suppose, respecting the weight of the issues themselves, but by putting them into a kind of a frame where they can be considered ridiculous or farcical, you can actually kind of interrogate the real meanings and the real consequences of those things. So, yeah, but I mean, it ultimately is a comedy, and that's what I have interest in performing, that's what I have interest in writing. So I think regardless of the political or social weight or depth of anything, you know, it was about making a comedy, but as the poster said, a comedy about things that aren't necessarily funny.
And do the issues that are dealt with in the play have a particular weight for yourself, or did you choose those particular issues for a reason?
Personal one? No, I mean, if anything, I'm in a very privileged position in society, like many people in that I'm middle class white, you know, they're all in my favour. But I mean, in terms of did it affect me personally, and that are they issues that I feel passionate about? Of course, yes. The refugee crisis, and then just stuff that is far more domestic, like everyday racism, prejudice within gender, sexuality, and religion, of course, as well. So yeah, I mean, it affects me personally in that there are issues I feel passionate about. I couldn't say that I experienced the prejudice that in the play, I suppose, inflicts on other people, but I suppose it depends on how you consider yourself to be affected by something. I mean, it affects all of us, really, you know. If we're part of a prejudiced society, then we're all victims of prejudice.
Absolutely, but it's great that some of us are aware of it, and by putting on a piece like Eamon from Menswear, you're creating an awareness in all your audience members as well, and spreading that awareness, which is a really good way to do it. It's a really good West.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's theatre, isn't it? It's very essence. Now, the great thing about it, though, is that you don't get the one reaction. You get people who see it the way I saw it, and saw it as a piece of satire on the things that on the issues that were involved in the play. And there's people who actually take offence from it, so that see it not as satire, but as like a perpetuation of the same issues, of you actually ridiculing the very issues that you're trying to actually offer some kind of a resolution to a satire. But that's one of the great things about theatre and about plays and about comedy, is that it's so subjective that you just get this great bricolage of different reactions. And me personally, as a theatre maker, as an actor, as a writer, I would much rather get a wide spectrum of very, I suppose, impassioned reactions rather than a kind of indifference. I liked it, I didn't like it, I found it funny, I didn't find it funny. So it's been great to get just reactions of all sorts to the contents of the show. So it's best case scenario as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of people in this country who make mildly racist remarks without even realizing that they're doing it. They don't have a particular problem with people who of race or of a particular gender or of a particular sexuality. but they'll make mildly racist, mildly sexist, or mildly homophobic remarks without even thinking about it.
But that's it. I mean, that's... Yeah, I agree completely. And that is kind of what the show is looking at. It's not about... We're not doing a show about people who go around burning down mosques or you know, go around opening fire. And, you know, obviously things that, you know, obviously exist. But this is more about the more subtle undertones of racism and prejudice that exist and that we probably don't acknowledge quite as much. Or if we do acknowledge them, we acknowledge them as a facet of our society as opposed to something that actually could be changed and made instead of normalizing the way it is. So it's about a racism and prejudice in its more microcosmic kind of state rather than the more obvious ones that we see in the media, you know.
But by bringing it into a musical element, a musical situation, you kind of lighten the subject and bring it to a more feel-good situation.
Yeah, it is. I suppose the idea is, and without wanting to spoil the play too much, because obviously we're hoping to bring it back, the idea is, in many ways, to lure people in with the lightness of it all. And obviously, you know, it's a comedy, you know, it's a musical. You have certain expectations of what you normally get. The good thing about this play and the great thing about Ill Advised Theatre, who put it on, is Andy and Sarah Jane, is that they specialise, or their main interest is musical theatre that goes against a lot of the conventions that we normally associate with musical theatre, which would be, you know, song and dance and a nice little arc to a story without anyone really getting upset or anything. You know, that's not to brush tar everyone with the same brush in terms of musical theatre, but what I suppose the idea with this and with Ill Advised is putting on a musical theatre that in some way is a bit more pervasive and a bit more like, I suppose, your standard non-musical play, and that isn't afraid to interrogate issues while still having the song and dance in it. And in many ways, the music, I think, and the musical element to it really goes further in interrogating these things, and actually the synthesis of both elements it makes for a much more kind of effective message, I think, at the end of it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe the sun won't come out tomorrow, Annie. You have to take that into account.
Well, Jesus, yeah. I mean, I'd like to think that you can look into these issues without necessarily having a very morbid outlook. I mean, it's not about putting on miserable musicals or putting on pessimistic musicals. It's just about maybe revisiting the idea of a musical being a lighthearted affair and actually thinking about maybe restructuring the genre a little bit more and saying, you know, well, actually, we can have our tomorrow and our It's a Hard Knock Life and still have some kind of death
more?
Or...
You want more?
Political undertones.
Now, I actually always had a very negative opinion of musicals because I was thinking of your West Side Stories, your Annies and your Fame, and they just did not appeal to me. But, like, watching Eamon, obviously I adored that one, and plays like A Man of No Importance was very interesting as well.
Yeah, that's a great one, actually. Those writers, they do some great stuff. Now, you're dead right. For a lot of people, the word musical sends off alarm bells, and I don't blame them at all, because it is such strong associations with the idea of musical theatre and Broadway, and, you know, we just have all these images of jazz hands, and it's definitely not everyone's cup of tea. And as I said, with Ill Advised and with Eamon from Enzor, I suppose what we're trying to do is deconstruct the idea of musical theatre a little bit and actually think about taking the elements we like, which is the musical, the rhythm, the I suppose a lot of the kind of tropes, or rearranging it to make something that is not quite as jazz hands and a little bit more introspective, I suppose.
It doesn't quite fit into the Andrew Lloyd Webber template for musicals.
No, but that's a great, you know, the great thing about the audience that came then is you have half the people who love musicals and they're coming to what they want is a nice big, you know, chorus line number, and then you have people who kind of are a bit more ambiguous about it and they're coming to see a play and stuff. So I kind of like the mixed messages that we kind of give out, and then we don't exclude, it doesn't mean that people say, oh, musical not going, or it doesn't mean that people are saying, it's a play, I want to see a musical. You know, we got a very nice spectrum of different people and different demographics, which is the way it should be. You know, there should be nothing esoteric or exclusive about the idea of a musical. It's such a broad idea. All it is a play with a bit of music in it.
Yeah, and of course, the idea behind the play is that we should be more inclusive and less quick to judge people based on their opinions on certain things, whether it's religion, race, or their taste in theatre. Who knows?
People, yeah, that's absolutely. I mean, you can tie it in with a lot of things. Yeah, I'd be reluctant, obviously, to say that the play has a message, in that I don't think we're prescribing anything. God knows I don't have a solution for, you know, for any of the issues we brought up in it. But I think if there is an overarching idea in the play, it's to maybe just not take things for granted, whether they be what people say, what people think, or the way society is structured, and just maybe think of everything as malleable, as deconstructible, and as rearrangeable, and just to never be happy with what you're given if you feel in some way that it's not enough or not fair or not indicative of the society that you live in. But then again, everyone will take something different from it, and that's the beauty of the whole thing, I suppose.
That's what individuality is, of course.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, that's kind of it, yeah.
But it is the way in which the musical element is incorporated into the play which makes the play so unique, and it gives the play a sense of life and vibrancy, which makes it so original. Have you got a musical background yourself?
Yeah. I mean, music would have been, I suppose, the first thing I had interest in pursuing. But then, I suppose, when I got into the acting and then writing, kind of followed after. I was always very interested in both the idea of film, or not even both, but the idea of film, theatre, and music. So when you find a way to fuse those together, which you surprisingly do quite a lot, then it's brilliant. You know, it's very thing I like. So me personally as a writer, I couldn't imagine, although I'd never read, I couldn't imagine writing something without a musical element to it, or even a rhythmic element to it, because it's just the way I write. Acting-wise, I've done a lot of things that don't involve music, but I think it is, certainly I would be a musician, so it's those roles that do involve some elements of musicality or instrumentation or anything are always just a little bonus. So music and theatre kind of go hand in hand for me, at least where possible.
Yeah, Arthur Reardon from Rough Magic did a really interesting adaptation of Peer Gynt years ago in the Orion Theatre.
Yeah.
Which I was reminded of when I was watching your piece, actually.
Really?
I went to see
that. Was a Rough Magic one, was it?
Yeah. I dragged my mother along to see that, and I was like, this is 3 hours long, she's going to kill me. She came in, I actually quite enjoyed that. I was in the process
of... Yeah, well, that's the great thing is you can really kind of change conceptions with, obviously, Peer Gynt, like, we all have an idea of what to expect with these kind of archaic, you know, classic plays, but it's great to see that somebody can take it into their hands and remold it as something new and something that actually brings in an audience that it might never have had before, you know?
Yeah, my main experience of Ibsen had been doing A Doll's House for my Leaving Cert, and wasn't exactly overjoyed at the idea of engaging more Ibsen work. He's not really...
I don't know if the Leaving Cert fosters the love of any particular writer.
Well, I adore Shakespeare still. It didn't taint my
love. Yeah, well, I'd agree. I don't know if the Leaving Cert did anything for it, or did, you know, but I think you kind of survive the Leaving Cert in terms of your literary taste, and then you can actually pursue what you like.
Yeah, well, I just came out of school. I was still a Shakespeare slut after the Leaving Cert, so...
Oh, fair play. You got through it, so...
I did not allow the man to take that away from me. No way.
Well, that's absolutely the idea, I suppose.
Yep, that's the one. It's very important to me. So what was it that inspired you to write a musical? Was it your background in music, or did you feel that it was a good way to get your message across in a lighthearted manner?
Do you mean specifically for Eamon?
Just specifically for Eamon.
Yeah. I think, as I said, like, after a certain amount of writing, not that I've written too extensively, but after a certain time you do realise what your niche, but your forte kind of is, and what you're comfortable writing. That's not to say that you should never sway from what you're comfortable writing, but I did start to think that something with at least a musical element or a rhythmic element is what I like writing, what I enjoy writing, and what I hopefully have some kind of capacity for writing in as well. So I guess it was simply that. Like, I didn't think that the particular story I was trying to convey, or the particular character, or any of the scenes, like, just called out for having a musical backdrop, or that they simply couldn't tell this story without music. It's just that's the way I like writing. Also, I mean, you know, I would sooner write a musical over a play, I think, because the way I was thinking, you know, I like the idea of bringing in people that maybe it's just their own experience of theatre is maybe this, as we were saying, this very conventional musical theatre, you know, it's almost like tourism, what they see in the West End and all that, and bringing in that audience, almost like luring them in with the word musical, and just kind of diversifying the audience a little bit, because you get the people that you always get that are, you know, they are theatre goers, but I like the idea of writing something that maybe casts the net out as regards demographic and lures a few people in to see it that would never have seen it if they hadn't heard the word musical or heard that it was a musical.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because I think in the past I would have heard musical and oh no, not now, thanks. But I think
well, that's the thing, it also casts people out.
After seeing A Man of No Importance, and then I just saw Aim, and I love this, I love the idea of the storyline and the musical element. I said, I don't know, I can deal with it. It's probably not going to be an all singing, all dancing West End production, so I'll be happy enough. And
Well, I mean, one of the big things is like the cost, the expense. You know, it's very hard to put on a poor theatre musical because you're talking, in most cases, a band, probably a very elaborate set, probably a big cast, including a chorus and all this. So I suppose a misconception that musicals equals lots of money. You need, you know, you can't put on a musical in the same way that you can put on a play.
Need an orchestra.
Yeah, but it's, but once you strip some of the conventional elements of the musical away from it, you realize that actually it's as feasible as any other performance. You know, you just need to, and this is by no means, I'm not campaigning for the removal of the band or the orchestra from musicals. I think it's, there's nothing like it. There's nothing like live music.
It worked very well.
But it is work.
Yeah, but I also agree that it doesn't have to be there. That's not a necessity.
No. Absolutely. There is just, musical theatre is so wrapped in what are considered to be, you know, essential conventions that you can't possibly, even like down to like the way people sing in musicals is very, now I know there's an element of it, like you have to be able to sing to a standard that you can keep up for 7 performances a week. I know that there's this technique and everything, but there is a musical theatre voice, which is a real shame because like you play such a variety of characters in any given production, and yet there's still this tenor voice that we're so used to, or this soaring soprano voice that it actually becomes hard to differentiate one singer from another, and it just seems a shame that even something as simple as voice gets this kind of standardized timbre that we just come to associate with the genre. So I guess, as I said, the ill-advised sentiments and my own personal idea is that you really can strip an awful lot of the layers of musical theatre back and you're left with it in the very core, which is just a play driven by music, which is all you need.
And so, at what point did you become involved in theatre? How did you find yourself where you are now?
I suppose I would have done what a lot of people do, the school musicals. I was always interested in film a good bit before that. I think I wanted to be a film director at the same time everybody else my age wanted to be a spaceman or whatever, you know, or a football player. So film directing was what I always wanted to do, although I always managed to, I suppose, crowbar myself into the same films that I was supposedly directing on the massive handycam thing that I think is still around the house somewhere. And then music kind of took over for a while. I was in bands for years, and then I suppose towards the end of school, maybe like TY, something like that, I realised that there was a way to combine these things. Now, like, above all else, I'm an actor, you know, and that's what I am, but in terms of making theatre and making different projects, what interests me most is the way you can fuse all those things together. So, what really got me into theatre specifically would be the idea that you could actually get music in there as well. It just seemed like, brilliant, that's all the things I'm interested in under the same, you know, in the same room. So that's probably what got me in. The music got me into the theatre, and then theatre probably got me back into music again. So they've always been kind of hand in hand. But yeah, I'm an actor anyway. That's my gig.
It's a perfectly good gig. It works very well for you, obviously. But I've noticed that it seems very common in the Irish theatre scene. It is such a close-knit scene. I mean, everybody knows everybody.
Yeah.
It seems common that actors are also directors or writers. Directors are also like sound engineers or lighting technicians.
Well, absolutely.
Everyone does a little bit of everything.
You have to eat.
Do you think it's out of necessity?
I mean, it's not all necessity, obviously, but I think that's a great thing that you have I suppose it's because there's less of a kind of a culture in Dublin than there is in London. I suppose, you know, in London you go and you train as an actor, you train in conservatory style, you know, and you come out as an actor ready to act. Whereas in Dublin, I can only speak for myself now, I would have done the theatre and drama studies course in Trinity, where you go in and you kind of get a go at all disciplines, and then towards the end you start to kind of specialise in the ones that you feel most interested in, that you feel you're best at. So you do kind of come out with a good kind of comprehensive sense, at the very least, of the different facets of theatre and how they work, as well as good grounding in, you know, I suppose, the idea of dramaturgy and how a play works and how theatre works, the whole kind of structure of things. So, and I think by virtue of the fact that the scene is so small as well, you kind of do have to. And there's also the facilities to do it. You know, you have great theatres like Smock that we did, Eamon in, the new theatre, the project, that you really can actually try your hand at different things. And there is
there's far
more of a culture of the actor-writer and the actor-director, I think, anyway.
And there's new places popping up all the time. There's the Viking has been there for a little while, but there's a new spot in Cornell's Court that's been there for a good while now, but it's very, like, people don't know it's there. It's above the Magic Carpet Pub in Cornell's Court, and it's kind of like similar style to the Viking.
Right.
They modelled themselves on the Viking, but it's very small, but you get actors like Andy Hines.
Yeah, of course.
But it's a lovely little theatre, and people don't know it's there, and it's just the most dreadful thing. I just don't understand.
Yeah. You think you've found them all, but then there's, like, somebody told me there recently there's apparently a theatre somewhere in Bussorris, which I never heard in my life, but apparently there is. I don't think it's still operational, of course, but it's funny that the little kind of, you never know what you'll find in these places, like, so it's well worth investigating, you know, as you said.
Exactly, and there's the pub theatre thing where people go into pubs and perform. I don't think that would work so well, but I think I've
pub
heard...
Pub theatre?
Yeah, I don't know, but then of course there's Beauty's Cafe, which is interesting.
One thing you can say about Irish culture, going back years and years and years, is that we have, perhaps stronger than any other country, a sense of storytelling and the idea of down the lights, the set and everything, and you know, we can tell a story. That's the thing that's really ingrained in Irish culture.
The Shanachie lives on.
Exactly, the Shanachie, yeah, exactly. So I think regardless of how many theatres we have, we always have this kind of respect for someone telling a story, however elaborate it might be, whether they're just standing in a pub or, you know, on the stage of Bord Gáis. But there is that culture and kind of appreciation for it, I think. So long may it continue, I suppose.
And every time the story is retold, it gets a little bit more exaggerated, and eventually it's so exaggerated that it has absolutely no relation to anything that could have ever been a reality in any way, shape or form.
Well, no, no time for reality.
Now, reality isn't made for theatre. Theatre is made for escaping reality. That's the whole point. Sometimes.
Absolutely. And that's obviously a big theme in Eamon as well, as the idea that we're dealing with real themes through completely surreal circumstances. So that is one very liberating thing, I suppose, about theatre, is that you can really address what are, for all intents and purposes, real-life issues that affect real-life people, but yet you needn't deal with them in a naturalistic sense.
Nope, it can be as abstract as you fancy. It's something that you create from nothing, and therefore it can be whatever you want it to be. That's why it's beautiful.
Absolutely.
And I love the fact that
that's why we do it.
Nothing. I love the immediacy of it, that no matter what happens, it's going to be a different show every night. You're never going to see two of the exact same show, because something might happen. It might not be something you'd even notice.
Oh, completely.
But somebody will breathe differently, or they won't be the same audience.
Which I'm sure drove our videographer mad, because he's trying to push together a video for it, and I don't know what kind of continuity it's going to have, but